Morning, everyone. I'm Jane Batty. Welcome to this July meeting of the San Francisco Regional Water Quality Control Board. We'll call the roll for our board in just a minute. As a reminder, in addition to in-person participants for our board meeting, we can receive public comment through our Zoom meeting platform. If you intend to comment or think you might be interested in commenting, we ask that you register online for our meeting today so that we know that we can call on you. I understand we have about six speakers, half dozen speakers for the public comment period already today. So thank you for your interest. If you are remote, you should have already received a link to the Zoom meeting. Please visit our website and register for the agenda if you need to for today's meeting. You will not be able to speak via the live webcast, but only through the Zoom service. If you are here in person, you can either register at the desk or through our website as well. For those on Zoom, you'll be on mute until it's your turn to speak. Our staff will then unmute you and promote you. Sometimes it takes a couple seconds so that we can see you on our screens. And when you have done speaking, when you're done speaking and the board members have completed any questions, you'll be placed back on mute. For those in the auditorium waiting to speak, you'll be called by name. And we ask that you come down to the podium so we can see you and hear you. For all speakers, whether on Zoom or here in person, we ask that you state your name and your affiliate organization, if applicable, when we call on you. We appreciate your patience and welcome your participation in our meeting today. I'm going to now ask Julie, our board clerk, Julie Hess, to call the roll.
Good morning. I apologize for the background noise. And Board Member Beelin.
Here.
Board Member Young.
Here.
Board Member Gunther.
Here.
Board Member Kissinger.
Here.
Vice Chair Hacker.
Here.
And Chair Batty.
Here.
Great.
Great. And it's nice to see a full table of board members here today. Thanks, everyone, for making it work around summer vacation schedules and to our executive team here as well in front of us. I'd like to now open our meeting to the public. Julie is going to help me through this process, our board clerk, and let us know who is coming in what order. Each speaker is allowed 3 minutes. We will have a clock to remind you of this, and we really appreciate your adherence to our time so that we get a chance to hear from everyone. I also want to remind you that the public forum is for items that are not on our agenda and that are not about a pending matter. meaning they're about to come up on our agenda in the next few months, and that it would be more appropriate to speak on those matters when they're actually on the agenda. Thanks for understanding. And Julie, with your help, who is first on the public forum today?
First, we have Leslie Koenig from SWAM Biological.
Great. Welcome. Good morning. Wes or Julie, do we have? There we go.
Hi, everyone. I'm here just to be available to answer any questions the board may have on one of the items that's on the agenda for the stream maintenance program.
Okay. So,
if you have any comments?
All right. Thank you, Leslie. We'll call on you as needed. Thank you.
Next on the list, I'm sorry, we have Chris Caputo from Caltrans.
Chris is speaking on an item on the agenda, so we'll table that.
I believe the rest of the speakers look like they're here to answer questions as needed.
Okay.
Can you, any of the public forum speakers, if you wish to speak as part of the public forum, please raise your hand. Otherwise, we can call on you when we reach that part of the agenda.
And you can use the virtual hand on the Zoom platform and we'll see you. But I'm not seeing anything, Julie. Are you? Okay, great. Then we're gonna continue forward. Great. Item three on our agenda is our board minutes from June 14th. Are there any questions or edits from the board on the minutes? Yeah. Anyone? No, I'm not seeing anything. Eileen, anything from you? All right, great. Can I get a motion?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Great. And I think we can do this just by a show of hands. All in favor? Any opposed? Any abstaining? Okay, great. The minutes are approved by the board. I'm going to move now to the swearing in for today. Just for those of you that can't hear that, there's a lovely background construction noise going on today at our meeting. We'll try not to let that distract us. I apologize. Before we proceed with the hearings today, I want to read the oath for all the speakers. All relevant evidence that any person desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing, first by the board staff, second by the discharger, third by public agencies, and fourth by any other interested parties. The board and board counsel may ask questions to clarify the testimony of a witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witness by others will be allowed following completion of direct testimony by all persons. Each person testifying will commence by stating their name, who they represent, and whether they took the oath to tell the truth. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony that is reasonably relevant to the issues. All board files, exhibits, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this process. Additional written materials will be made part of the record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify in the hearing will now rise or raise their hand. Do you promise to tell the truth? Thank you. Eileen, we're going to proceed now with item four, the uncontested calendar, and so I'll ask you to go through that.
Great. Thank you so much, Chair Batty. So the first item on the uncontested calendar is the City of Burlingame and North Bayside System Unit, City of Burlingame Wastewater Treatment Facility and Collection System. This is an uncontested item, but for the benefit of the public, I'll give a brief summary that this tentative order would reissue the MPDS permit for the City of Burlingame Wastewater Treatment Plant, which serves about 37,000 people. The facility discharges about 2.6 million gallons per day of secondary treated wastewater to Lower San Francisco Bay through a deep water diffuser about 5,300 feet offshore. The most significant difference between the revised tentative order and the previous tentative order is that it implements the new toxicity provisions. And then the second item on the uncontested calendar is the amendment of the general waste discharge requirements and water quality certification for stream maintenance programs for the City of Livermore and also for the County of Marin. And so this revised tentative order would amend the waste discharge requirements and water quality certification for stream maintenance programs in Napa, San Mateo, Contra Costa, and Sonoma counties, and the Mid-Peninsula Regional Open Space District's routine maintenance program to incorporate the City of Livermore's and Marin County Flood Control and Water Conservation District's stream maintenance programs. The programs are ongoing and currently are being implemented under separate authorizations, which are expiring and will be replaced by the revised tentative order. The revised tentative order would authorize Livermore and Marin County to perform routine stream maintenance activities consistent with each of their program manuals and would not change the authorizations for the other discharges named on the order. We are recommending the board adopt both of these items, and we are available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Great. I'm going to just ask a clarifying question. The second item, the amendment to the general waste discharge requirements, this is something that we adopted a couple of years ago, if I recall, or maybe more, and have been adding additional jurisdictions to it. Can you just talk a little bit about the process here so we are all up to speed on that?
Sure, and since Liz and Keith came in, I'm gonna let Liz and Keith go ahead and respond.
Good morning. Thanks for being here.
And I should introduce Keith Lichten's the manager of our watershed division, and Elizabeth Morrison is one of the supervisors and leads the 401 service.
So good morning, Chair Batty, board. In this case, with the stream maintenance program, we have two jurisdictions, the city of Livermore and Marin County, that are covered under existing authorizations for stream maintenance. So this is sort of a housekeeping procedure where we're bringing them under the, I call it like the Christmas tree order, and we're hanging a few new ornaments on the tree. So that's—
It's a great description, thank you.
Okay. That's to say that we certainly have a few other flood control districts like Alameda County that have interest and currently are not covered. In that case, they would just submit a new application and we would sort of review it de novo to incorporate them under the order.
Okay, great. Can I turn to the board now for questions on any, either the consent? Well, why don't we take them one at a time? Any questions on consent item A, the City of Burlingame and North Bayside system?
Yeah.
Question. Vice Chair Hacker.
I did. I know they're not planning on adding any recycled water component, and I'm just hopeful that in the course of this permit term that they will consider doing so. It just seems we're at a point now where we talk about this with each of our permits, and it's always worth asking the question, would they consider doing something like this? Thanks.
Great, thank you. All right, item B, the amendment of the general waste discharge requirements. Any questions there? Board Member Gunther, please.
A couple of quick questions. Do people want to get put on a Christmas tree? Is this something that is making it easier for our permittees to do their stream maintenance while satisfying permit requirements?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. I also wanted to ask about, as we're doing this, there has been a growing, as I understand it, body of knowledge that we don't need to rip everything out of a stream course in order to maintain flood control benefits, so that we can have trees of a certain diameter, we can have, is that kind of habitat maintenance and being integrated into our stream maintenance programs as well?
It is, and let me say a few words about that. If you get fairly deep into the order, you'll see that each of the flood control districts or each of the dischargers under the order is expected to, over time, characterize their channels by taking quantitative measurements as well as qualitative measurements to basically, rather than doing the proverbial windshield survey of, oh, it looks like we need to desilt, to understand, you know, how much water is going to get through. And I also want to commend one of the dischargers, the Sonoma County Water Agency, for developing essentially a procedure by which they can get to, through the succession, through vegetative succession, get to woody riparian, providing shade over the channel, of course, allochthonous input of, you know, bugs and that kind of thing, without compromising flood control. So finding a way to something beyond the sort of proverbial 1950s channels.
And then is there a mechanism by which the various ornaments on the tree can share their monitoring data, their successes, so that everybody can learn from single places rather than everybody repeating the same kind of experiments?
So the short answer is yes, but we actually do that outside the order. The flood control districts and others are coordinating through the Bay Area Flood Protection Agencies Association, or BAFPA. And so we meet with them roughly quarterly. We have an annual workshop or conference where that kind of information sharing takes place.
Thank you.
Great. So we have a recommendation to adopt both items. I need a motion and a second, please.
So moved.
Second.
Wonderful. Thank you. Julie, please call the roll.
Member Beelen.
Aye.
Board Member Young.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hacker.
Aye.
And Chair Batty.
Aye. Wonderful. All right, thank you. All right, we're going to move on to information item number 5. This is a fast moving board meeting today. State Highway 37, And I'm going to turn this over to Executive Officer White. This is a topic that has been back and forth to the board, and we look forward to learning more today.
Great. Thank you so much. We've been excited because we've been participating in an interagency permitting work group for the Highway 37 Sears Point to Merrill Island Improvement Project now for some time. And we've been working with multiple agencies to incorporate a phased climate adaptation approach that improves resiliency of wetlands and mudflats along the corridor. Javier Fernandez, our planning division manager for the San Francisco Water Board, will provide some background, and then we'll have a presentation from the Metropolitan Transportation District and Caltrans. So with that, Javier, I'm gonna turn it over to you.
Good morning, Chair Batty and fellow board members. My name is Javier Fernandez, and I lead the planning division at the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Quality Control Board. Highway 37 transportation projects provide us an incredible opportunity to advance what could be a national model for multi-benefit climate change adaptation. These projects can solve one of the region's most urgent transportation challenges while making the transportation infrastructure and tidal wetlands in the area more resilient to climate change. Today, I'll provide a brief history of the area of the North Bay where the Sears Point to Merrill Island segment of Highway 37 sits. Then I'll discuss a vision for the area. Next, Jeanette Wiseman of the Metropolitan Transportation Commission and Chris Caputo of the California Department of Transportation will provide an overview of the phased approach for Highway 37. Then I'll return to discuss how Water Board staff are implementing our strategic plan's climate action and creek, wetland, and bay protection priorities by participating in multi-agency teams to develop a corridor-wide vision to rebuild State Highway 37 using a phased adaptation approach to address rising sea levels. To understand the opportunities presented by the Highway 37 projects, it's really helpful to understand how the current landscape came into being. Before Western colonization, the North Bay supported a vast, complex expanse of tidal wetlands, as shown in green on the map. These wetlands had robust connections to upland habitats, as well as to Tolley Creek, shown on the left, Sonoma Creek in the middle, and the Napa River over to the right. These streams nourished the wetlands with tremendous pulses of fresh water and sediment from their watersheds and supported tidal connections to the bay. Along the northern edge of the bay, strong winds and waves created a narrow band of high ground similar to how dunes are formed above beaches. After Western colonization, the tidal marshes' relatively flat topography made them prime targets for reclamation to support agriculture, transportation, and other uses. By roughly 1888, rail lines had been constructed through and along the edges of the wetlands. You can see on the map where the rail line now owned and operated by the Sonoma Marin Area Rail Transit District runs along on the left side north across Tolley Creek and then east across Sonoma Creek and Napa River before it splits and runs north and south. Reclamation of the baylands was completed by the early 1920s. And in 1928, a toll road was built along the northern edge of the bay from Sears Point to Vallejo on top of that narrow band of wave-built high ground on the edge of the marsh. This eventually became what we now know as State Route Highway 37. Reclamation disconnected the tidal wetlands from uplands, rivers, and creeks. And by the time wetland restoration in the region began in earnest in the late 20th century, many former marshes have subsided to below sea level. In this map, areas with elevations below the tides are shown in blue. Areas between the tides are shown in various shades of green. And areas above the tides, where we anticipate sea levels to rise, are shown in yellow, orange, and red. Most of the wetlands in the area are now either actively being restored or are planned to be restored. However, for these wetlands to keep pace with rising sea levels and not drown, we need to first reconnect the interior wetlands to the abundant supplies of fresh water and sediment provided by Tolley Creek, Sonoma Creek, and the Napa River, so that these interior wetlands can gain elevation through vegetation growth and sediment accretion. Second, we need to reconnect the interior wetlands to the adjacent uplands so the wetlands can move upslope when they can no longer keep up with sea level rise. And lastly, we need to reconnect the interior wetlands to the high wave-built wetlands along the edge of the bay, often called strip marshes, so the strip marshes can move inland as they are pushed by rising sea levels. If these reconnections don't happen, the wetlands will erode and drown. In fact, you can already see this happening if you look south as you drive along Highway 37 towards Mare Island, where about 900 acres of marsh have already drowned. And now I'll turn it over to Jeanette Weissman of the Metropolitan Transportation Commission and Chris Caputo of the California Department of Transportation to discuss the phased implementation of Highway 37 projects.
Thank you, Javier. Thank you all for having me. As Javier said, I'm Jeanette Weissman with the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. I'm the State Route 37 Corridor Program Manager. And in that role, I am supporting the 7 transportation agencies plus BAFA, our tolling authority, in coordinating all of the interests, the transportation interests, that align at State Route 37. So that includes MTC, Caltrans. I'll let Chris say hello in a moment and speak to his role with Caltrans. And then the 4 North Bay Transportation Authorities of Marin, Sonoma, Napa, and Solano. We've recently integrated SMART into this collaboration with the understanding and goal of better integrating SMART into our planning and project delivery. And then as Javier mentioned earlier, we have a broader collaboration with regulatory agencies that are really partners as well and helping us improve the project development process and then move towards a streamlined and more efficient permitting and project delivery process. So maybe I'll pause there and we could go to Chris to introduce himself, if that's possible.
Yeah, good morning, board. I'm hopeful that you can see and hear me right now. My name is Chris Caputo with Caltrans. I'm the acting deputy district director for the environmental division here in District 4. I'm also notable as the co-lead for the recently concluded planning and environmental studies. Environmental linkages study that was completed by Caltrans this past at the end of the last calendar year. And we'll remark more on that in a moment. So good morning.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go to the next slide, please. So what we're trying to do as part of this resilient State Route 37 program and partnership is to advance the near-term improvements to State Route 37 that will keep the highway operational and functioning, and then also deliver some of the really pressing improvements that are needed ecologically and, you know, throughout the equitable concerns as well as with public access. And so those are lined up underneath the Sears Point to Mare Island. We are working on that. At one point, we called that the interim project. Now we see it, as we've been working on it for several years now, as our near-term project. And we're moving that forward from our environmental step into our final design stage. But concurrently, we are working on developing the long-term resilience projects that are going to be needed to make State Route 37 able to withstand forthcoming sea level rise and flooding that's going to, in absence of real change, inundate State Route 37. So we'll go into further details, but that's multi-pronged. We also are looking for not just the corridor resilience, but looking at ways in which we can develop a better highway, one that integrates better bike, pedestrian access, and really moves the North Bay Baylands restoration forward. Next slide. So the near-term project, the Sears Point Tamir Island Improvement Project, begins just west of State Route 121 on 37, and then it goes east to Mir Island, to the Mir Island interchange. And the scope of this project is oriented around the lane drop, where we currently go from two lanes in each direction into one in this section, which causes a significant delay, particularly during commute peak times, but also during major events like the Sonoma Raceway, and even just randomly on weekends, you'll just find you'll get redirected around this section. So this has been a pressing high priority concern of the North Bay for many years now. So I guess what I'd like to just emphasize is that we're going to be adding that second lane, but it's going to be an innovative second lane. It's going to be an HOV lane, a high occupancy vehicle lane, and we're going to be introducing bus transit to address the commute traffic and movement going east to west in the morning, west to east, and just more generally across this corridor. Currently, there is no such public transit option going across Highway 37. Next slide. Okay, so sorry, this is very busy. You can look at it maybe on your own time, but what I want to try to introduce here is this idea of our partnership and our vision. And it's still being developed, but as Chris had mentioned earlier, we had the Planning Environmental Linkages Study that was completed this past December 2022, which really defined a process for moving forward on the long-term resilience projects. Whereas we had previously looked at potentially one giant sea level rise project, we realized that there really should be many of them, and really eight specific projects or phases were called out, and those are identified in that Pell section's top level. So that's kind of the vision of where we go with our long-term sea level rise projects or phases. Immediately down below for near term, we have our Sears Point Tamir Island Improvement Project, which is filling the gap, not just for that one lane, but also to get us to the long-term project. That section of State Route 37 from Sears Point to Mir Island is a discrete project, and it's anticipated to cost at least $2 billion. So we need some work to develop the funding and the planning and all the coordination that's going to be required to really bring this ultimate long-term causeway with its multi-benefits, you know, to bear and to properly engage with regulatory agencies and then also the public. But we are moving forward with that, not only as the Sears Point to Mir Island kind of main project, but also through coordination with Javier and other members of the regulatory community and collaboration, and also the Baylands group to really integrate the most pressing and highest priority ecological improvements. And that includes the Tolley Creek Bridge replacement, which will open up the Tolley Creek channel where it's currently very constrained in order to allow the Sonoma Creek Baylands strategy restoration projects to proceed and to enable the floodwaters that will occur as we reconnect the historic Baylands habitats to Tolley Creek to go through without inundated infrastructure, inundating adjacent land use areas. So we are working to support that as part of this project. We are also working to integrate the East Strip Marsh enhancement that Javier queued up and will tell you more about in order to keep that high value habitat for special status species, sensitive baleen species going while we move towards that elevated causeway and can allow the strip marsh to retreat as it will need to do over time. I think that's really the critical part. So I'll leave it there and then hand it back over to Chris.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, Jeanette. To add on to Jeanette's remarks right there, I did want to provide the board this morning a very brief update on the corridor-wide perspective on what Caltrans and our transportation partners, the Resilient 37 team, are working on this lower bar here that you see of projects, which is in service of the long-term solution and projects related that are depicted in the graphic in the upper portion of the graphic here. And like Jeanette mentioned, these projects or segments, sections, were identified by the Pell study, and the Pell study had wonderful contribution and support and participation by Water Board staff, and so really reflects your input as well. And we were able to identify these 8 projects that we plan to deliver in the coming years as part of the long-term solution for the corridor. And so what you see on the bottom here with this this segment 2 here, which it goes from US 101 intersection to the Atherton Avenue intersection, is what we're calling the flood reduction project. And this project is the first project that has been sort of programmed and will be delivered as the long-term resiliency project as envisioned by the Pell study. And the reason that project is underway right now is because this project had already been in our project delivery pipeline for a couple years, because it was came to as a result of the flooding and the closures that we experienced along this segment of 37 all the way back from 2017 and subsequent closures in recent years, including this past year. And so this project was already in our hopper, so to speak, and we had an opportunity as the Pell study moved forward to re-envision the project, to deliver the project in alignment with the vision that was created by the Pell study. And so the big update today is that this project, the flood reduction project, is going to be releasing its draft environmental document next month. And so Caltrans and our partners will be sending advance notification to the board and board staff of that release. And then we plan to conclude our environmental process for that project by the end of the calendar year, with the current schedule being to begin construction in May of 2027. You can also see on the graphic here down below, as Jeanette alluded, that we plan to deliver this project in close coordination with the Novato Creek Baleen Strategy, which is also getting underway right now. So we believe the project is well timed to deliver the transportation improvements in alignment with that strategy. And so we're excited about that as well. And then the final bar, the dark green bar on the bottom of the screen, you can see is we plan to deliver this project and all the subsequent projects in the corridor in coordination with SMART as well. And then finally, I just want to remark on all the blank boxes that you see to the left and right of the flood reduction project, which have a lot of TBDs. And I want to let the board know that the Resilient 37 Transportation Partners Executive Steering Committee and staff are working right now very diligently to identify funding and programming for each of these projects. And we don't have a lot to report at the moment on those subsequent projects, but we are working on a prioritization exercise as recommended by the Pell implementation plan, and hope to provide future updates to the board on these projects as they fall into our pump or get funded and fall into our delivery pipeline as well. So with that, we can switch to the next slide, please. I just quickly want to direct everybody to the 2 websites on the screen. These are 2 wonderful sites you can visit to learn as much as you wish on the 37 corridor and our projects, and have backup information for anything that you've seen today. Thanks, Jeanette.
Okay, now I'll discuss how the Water Board staff has been implementing our strategic plans, creek climate action, and creek wetlands and bay protection priorities. Can you switch to the, there it is. We've been collaborating with transportation agencies, other regulatory agencies, and restoration advocates to first develop a corridor-wide vision to rebuild Highway 37, and then implement the vision through a phased adaptation strategy. We began this collaboration in 2017 by providing guidance during the design alternatives assessment and continue to provide design guidance today. In 2019, we began participating in the State Route 37 Baylands Group, which is a group convened by the Coastal Conservancy to provide input on transportation and restoration planning in the North Bay. In 2020, we began engaging with the transportation agencies and regulatory agencies on the Traffic Congestion Relief Project, which is also known as the Sear Point to Mare Island Improvement Project that Jeanette discussed. As part of this, we agreed to help coordinate a regulatory integration team to facilitate the permitting of a multi-benefit project. From 2021 through 2023, we participated in two working groups as part of the Planning Environmental Linkage Process, or the PEL process. The PEL process led to the formulation of a causeway as the preferred long-term solution. And now I'll discuss how Water Board staff are collaboratively exploring short-term opportunities with the transportation agencies, regulatory agencies, and restoration advocates. First, as I mentioned before, about 900 acres of vegetated wetland just south of Highway 37 has been lost because poor drainage exacerbated by sea level rise is drowning the vegetation. This area is referred to as Strip Marsh East, and the loss of vegetation is degrading habitat for the endangered salt marsh harvest mouse. The nature-based approach for the Sears Point to Mare Island Improvement Project is to restore the vegetation by creating a new sinuous channel to improve drainage. This will allow vegetation to reestablish in the area, which will, in turn, protect the highway by dampening wave runup while improving habitat for the endangered salt marsh harvest mouse. This concept was developed in collaboration with some of our partners in the Baylands Group and presented to both the transportation agencies and the regulatory agencies, who both provided positive feedback. In addition to enhancing the strip marsh along the eastern segment of Highway 37, the Sears Point to Mare Island Improvement Project also provides opportunities at creek crossings that will facilitate restoration activities outside the direct project footprint. For instance, we are working with the transportation agencies, regulatory agencies, and restoration advocates to evaluate alternatives for the Tolley Creek Bridge crossing that would lengthen and potentially raise the bridge to enhance the tidal connection between both sides of the highway at Tolley Creek. This would allow a project to enhance the hydrology at the Tolley Creek fan site to move forward in the near term. In addition, the transportation agencies are proposing to undertake modeling of hydraulics and sediment transport at the Sonoma Creek Bridge to evaluate whether the existing bridge is sufficiently long enough to support near-term restoration of tidal wetlands at Camp 1. And lastly, we've suggested to the transportation agencies that one or both of these projects might serve as compensatory mitigation for current and future projects in the area. In conclusion, the Highway 37 transportation projects provide an incredible opportunity to advance what could be a national model for utilizing nature-based approaches for both climate adaptation that improves resiliency of critical infrastructure as well as natural resources. And now we'll take questions.
Great.
Great, thank you. Thanks to all our guest presenters, as well as Javier for really informative item. I wanna go to the board now, and I think I'm just gonna start with Donald and go down the line and see if folks have questions. So Donald, do you wanna start us out?
I do not, but thank you. Very good report. Great.
Vice Chair Hacker?
I just wondered, in the broader scheme of things, what are the most significant events this year with regard to the different elements of the project, other than what the gentleman from Caltrans, Chris, mentioned about the environmental documentation on the Atherton side?
Jeanette, perhaps you'd like to talk about the agreement between the transportation agencies and natural resource agency.
Right. So in January of this year, we completed an agreement with CNRA, the California Natural Resource Agency, and CalSTA, the State Transportation Agency, and then several of the implementing agencies, including CDFW, BCDC, and then also Caltrans District 4 and MTC, with the agreement and the commitment to move forward both to advance this near-term Sears Point Timber Island improvement project for the really pressing equity concerns and transportation needs, but then to do so as, you know, integrating the ecological concerns and interests that relate to the North Bay, and then moving forward expeditiously and efficiently towards the long-term resilience. So that's what Javier was referring to in terms of like a major milestones that just, you know, just over our shoulder now. And now we are working hard and furiously to, you know, integrate and follow through with those commitments. Those commitments specifically refer to the Tole Creek Bridge replacement, also Strip Marsh East enhancement. And now we're working very, you know, strategically to incorporate them into our project delivery. So what does that mean outside of delivery talk? It means catching it up, having figuring out our environmental process, our CEQA NEPA pathway that will work to move that forward in lockstep with the main project, because we want to deliver them before or by the main project. And we've heard loud and clear that the East Strip Marsh enhancement is very time sensitive. So we are looking at ways that we can expedite that in particular. But we're also updating our overall design as we move into the project final design and permitting. So not all of that will happen by the end of this calendar year, but that really is right in front of us and what our collaboration of transportation and regulatory agencies are working month by month on.
If I may, just one follow-up question. How are tribal interests in this part of the Bay Area being engaged, if any?
I think I can speak to that. The tribes have been engaged in several different ways as part of the 37 program in general, certainly through our environmental process. As we have projects and deliver projects, we engage the tribes as required by SEPA, NEQA, and the related laws as well. And so we have an engagement process there that we're required to undertake, and we do so. The tribes were invited and participated in the Pell study for the corridor, and so we got their input there as part of the Pell study and their participation on associated stakeholder working group and the technical working groups as well. Right now, we are engaging the tribes regularly through both standing meetings that Caltrans District 4 has with tribes as sort of best practice for reviewing projects, et cetera, quarterly and so on. And then we're also setting up regular 37 corridor specific meetings to keep the tribes informed and participating on sort of all things 37, if you will. And so we really sort of have a three to four level or layer approach to engaging the tribes right now, and hoping that this approach keeps everybody informed and participating, and that all the avenues and stakeholders are getting the input that we need.
Thank you, Chris. All right, Board Member Gunther, questions?
So I don't think you guys are tooting your horn loud enough. And maybe I'm not quite up to speed on everything that's going on in projects like this around the state, but this is an extraordinary thing that you guys are doing. First of all, you are close to my heart. You are telling a science-based story to start your presentation. You are laying out the whole rationale. As I understand it, the Pell process is a federal process that has never been done before in the Bay Area?
That's correct, in California. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And so, but you guys are pioneering it. It's going to make, it's clearly organizing the institutional framework that will allow us to permit this project faster. It's also possibly helping the whole thing make sense in terms of accessing federal funding at some point, I would assume.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is really brilliant. And I think that I got a chance to hear this presentation previously at BCDC, and the whole idea that Caltrans and MTC are coming to the agencies with a multi-benefit project, with truly a multi-benefit project. Hey, should we make the Tolley Creek Bridge longer? I mean, this is not something that would have been something that was part from the ground up before. So I hope that this is turns out to be a model for all the other transportation resilience approaches that we need, where we can do this on, you know, this is crossing what, 2 or 3 OLUs. I mean, this the scale of this is really extraordinary. It's really fantastic. I just have one question, which is, and it's a science-based question. We are about to open through this project a greatly increase the tidal activity over the next 10, 20 years in the North Bay. Is that increase in tidal prism large enough to affect sea level rise at any given time in the North Bay, like using Mark Stacey's model?
That's a highly technical question.
Well, you don't have to answer it now.
The answer is likely not in this area, but okay. I would need to look further into that a bit more.
Okay. All right. Thanks. That's all my questions.
Bill, let me just make one comment. I just want to say that I'm looking at my screen here and I can see Chris smiling by Dr. Gunther's comments. And it is not often Caltrans is at a meeting with us and smiling. So I just wanted to say, just add my thanks to that as well. And glad to see that, Chris.
Yeah, I certainly do appreciate those comments. We've set a very ambitious program, a very aggressive schedule. You're right, this is unprecedented. And so that acknowledgement on all the hard work is just, it's always good to hear. And we've gotten a lot of good feedback from the board. And I do want to just underscore our appreciation for having Javier support, other staff support every step of the way. It just makes things work the way they should work. So I have a lot of reasons to smile. So I do appreciate that.
Just real brief, what I will say is that that tidal prism is going to result in a much wider channel, at least initially at Tolley Creek. And that's why it's so important, you know, and why they can't do the Tolley Creek fan enhancement project until the bridge is wider, because without that wider bridge, you would have issues with the channel widening and potentially threatening that bridge. So that's the real key hydrology question at Tolley Bridge.
So I have two questions. So one is, you know, this is a 20 plus year plan. Is that fast enough given the threats that we're facing? I mean, I recognize this is a very challenging project and it's a massive project, but back to the question, is that fast enough?
What the Strip Marsh East project is really designed to buy time. So one of the different ways that we're trying to get people to think is that's really part of the project and not mitigation on the side. It's incorporated in the project. Given rates of sea level rise, it's projected it should be enough time, but there's a lot of uncertainties around that, and they're not raising the road. So, you know, as sea levels rise and we get more models get refined again, you know, Caltrans and MTC will be able to adapt to that reality. But the important thing, I think, is that they've started and they're really working hard, and kudos to them, working hard to get it done as fast as possible, given all the funding challenges and the design challenges and all of that. And I think we have to be hopeful and cautiously optimistic that it will be in time.
Yeah. I mean, I asked the question on the heels of, you know, the hottest series of days that the Earth has ever experienced. One has to think that we're facing bigger challenges than we're modeling right now.
Can I add on real quickly? I just wanted to clarify a couple of points. One is that the transportation specific side of the Sears Point Timber Island Improvement Project does include some also kind of interim adaptation steps that, you know, strategically reduce flooding vulnerability in those sections that are the most low-lying and therefore most vulnerable to the floods near and then moving forward during that time frame. And we have so there's some slight elevations in those locations and stabilization, because we have, in addition to sea level rise, we also have sinking because of the bay mud that underlies that roadway. So we're taking those steps, also looking at nature-based way solutions that we can reduce vulnerability, and also, you know, looking at the tolling that we are going to be using as part of our delivery to help speed up delivery of those long-term projects, because some of that toll funding will be used to as part of our funding pursuits as local match and to directly go into our funding strategies.
Yeah. As a regular user of Highway 37, I thank you. My second question goes to the question of mass transit. You mentioned the dedicated bus lane. At one time, I'd seen plans in which the smart rail line was going to actually be on the highway router, you know, joining it. And that doesn't appear to be part of it any longer. Can you tell me about that change?
Well, the future of SMART is still to be determined in terms of its co-alignment and placement along State Route 37. So SMART has a lot of work, and they are doing it to figure out their movement, both for freight and potentially for passenger rail along the corridor. Currently, freight goes north at State Route 121, and they're evaluating the possibility of moving the line or at least establishing a line for passenger rail that could go east and parallel State Route 37, because that early planning process is still in progress. You know, the actual determination as to whether SMART would be part of a structure, adjacent to a structure, is not yet determined, but that's the work that we're doing right now, and trying to merge the SMART plans, catch that up to speed with what we're doing on State Route 37.
So it's not foreclosed to be part of the same structure. Great, yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
I just wanted to say how impressed I am and how much progress you guys have made. I mean, I only heard the one other briefing on this, and it seems like you've just really come a long way and made a lot of progress. So grateful for that. It's very impressive.
Great. Thanks. I have just a few questions. I want to ask, so if I remember right, the number that Warner Chabot keeps putting out or has been put out by others is $110 billion in climate change adaptation for infrastructure. And what's the cost on this project again? Did I hear?
Well, the Sears Point or the overall program, Sears Point is approximately $500,000. It's like $430 million. I wish it was $530 million.
Yeah. Don't
that includes mitigation. And then the overall long-term resilience projects altogether would be something like $6 to $11 billion. That's what the Pell identified 2022.
So it's easy to see how we get to 110 billion pretty fast.
And actually, those estimates keep going up.
Right.
I just want to point that out because as we factor in different things, it just keeps increasing. So it's likely going to be up above 110 billion is what I would think.
Great. My second question is, could you talk a little bit about any of you, Chris, Jeanette, or Javier, about that? This is a good news story. I mean, it's a very difficult story, but it's also some really positive, as Andy says, very science-based program. And how is the news getting out to people in these days when there's a lot of doom and gloom and questions about what the regulatory and planning community is doing? How's the story getting out?
Right. That is a critical part of our work. And I'll get started, but happy to turn it over to you guys to follow up and fill in. So to bring it back to that partnership that I mentioned earlier in January with CNRA and CalSTA, you know, that is part of what we're trying to coordinate on to translate the work that we're doing, that kind of like running like crazy at the project level, to communicate that to stakeholders and other potential partners at the state and federal level. So we are working to figure out our communication strategy and how both to talk to, talk with, and hear, work with all these different levels of potential collaborators. So it's a work in progress. One thing I will point out, in addition to this regular coordination that we have across those agencies, is that we also received a regional infrastructure accelerator grant this past year. That's from USDOT FHWA as part of the Build America Bureau. And its intention is really to facilitate these really big, important, nationally infrastructure projects. And so that money and that purpose is to help us both with that innovative financing and funding strategy to crack that big $1 billion nut to fund our projects. And then also to help us with our communication. So we have that as part of our project efforts moving forward, and we'll, you know, looking to get additional support to deliver this more, I don't know, coherently, you know, in a way that will people will understand. So I don't know if you what you would add, Javier, and then Chris.
Just that some of our partners have submitted editorials, and I know our very own Tom Mumley was quoted in the Marin Independent Journal not that long ago regarding this project. It's been difficult to get the media to pick up the positive story. They tended to pick up more of when there was contention, and that's when Tom got quoted about the potential of this project. And so I think that's something that we'll need to continue to work on to get a positive message out as opposed to the negative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Chris?
Yeah, I can report a little update that I'm happy to deliver here this morning, which is that Caltrans is currently working on establishing, creating a corridor-wide communications plan and strategy. And this is something that we've done in the past for other mega projects in the Bay Area, like Bay Bridge. And this is really an essential foundational kind of document and guidance and approach and commitment to communications for, you know, this type of project. But it's especially needed in this corridor due to all the complexities that we've sort of experienced up to date. You know, the messaging in the corridor is very challenging. We've found that if we don't have a day in and day out commitment to the messaging, that memories are short, and we want to keep this in the forefront of everybody's mind and their sight and understanding for all of those reasons. But we are in the process of developing a corridor-wide communication plan and strategy that is going to guide us for years to come in a program.
Great. Thanks, all of you. I will just comment that I appreciate all the communication in the counties that are most impacted and the parts of the Bay Area that are most impacted. But this is also a wider story around the agencies and the resource entities that are working so hard for the Bay Area overall. And seems with the concerns about another big winter heading our way, that some stories soon would be great to get out there. So appreciate all you're doing. I think Board Member Gunther wanted to add something on this.
Yeah, I just, I had a memory that I wanted you to expand on, which had to do with the nature of the idea of an interim project as part of a much longer term solution and how the kinds of permit conditions that might be applied to an interim project as versus of thinking of it as two complete projects, and that given the focus on being able to build things more quickly, this is another part of the story, right? And my memory was that traditionally your interim project, BCDC might have required you to put a bike lane along there, adding enormous complexities to how wide the thing is and how you, you know, preserve or allow the strip marsh to migrate. And that when thinking about the bigger picture and the complete benefits that come, that at least this BCDC member is thinking, you know, a bike lane's great, but maybe it's part of the final project, not part of the interim project. So, and is one, am I making that up or is that real? And then two, is that, are we also thinking, as I understand it, about how to make permitting efficient and how we might, each of us permitting agencies might give up a little something in the interim in order to get that project going so that have more benefits in the longer term.
Right, and maybe I'll start off and then hand it over to you. Yeah, so yes and yes. You know, BCDC's been, you know, an active collaborator in the State Route 37 partnership and then just ongoing. And to that specific example, we are looking at strategic ways that we can fill in the gap for public access while not creating like big cumbersome expanded footprint for the project. And so I'll give you an example of that is a merging of interests around Tole Creek. With that Tole Creek bridge replacement, we see an opportunity to be worked out in the design phase, which we're about to jump into, to include bike ped access that would then connect with existing Bay Trail trails to the west and to the east and close what would be approximately a gap that would then connect 9 miles of Bay Trail. So that's the way that we're looking at to address BCDC's needs and interests without kind of creating a bigger project with greater bay fill. So I'll just kind of reference that. And then I will mention quickly that in our partnership agreement at the state level, we've identified and recognized that permit streamlining and collaboration is a critical part of the story. And so it is a commitment that, you know, the agencies have made, you know, our existing agencies, and we look to expand that. We are contemplating an MOU with regulatory agencies where we hopefully can further work out the details, but that is the intention. And then we'll have to figure out exactly how we make that happen. Javier, anything to add?
Short answer is we have work to do and that we're currently are undertaking that work. And we're really talking about a different way of thinking. And to get people to think differently, we have to start building trust and understanding. And so right now we're still in the process of building trust between the regulatory agencies, the transportation agencies, and the restoration advocates. And once we do that, then I think we can get to that common vision that I presented that we're still working on. When we get there, then we can have a more constructive dialogue with all the regulatory agencies and the restoration advocates and the transportation agencies. The good news is the transportation agencies are a partner in this along with several of the regulatory agencies. So a few agencies that maybe we need to bring along, I was just in a meeting yesterday with one of them, we're working on it and we're slowly getting them to see the broader vision and the long-term need.
That's a really important communications story, right? I mean, your initial graphic with the timeline and suddenly the pylons appear, the causeway, these kind of things are enormously important. It's really easy for the media to cover the conflict, but you can make it easy for them to cover other things as well with great graphics, with these kind of stories. And I want you to be not afraid to share your vision and tell the story, even if part of it is still a little bit of hope on your part. I mean, that's okay. I think that this is exactly the kind of thinking that we're going to need, not just on Highway 37, not just on transportation projects. And there's an incredible amount of pressure growing, I think, around this idea of we can't build things fast enough. And there's going to be a tremendous amount of political pressure that elected officials are going to feel. And for us to be able to give them things to point to is really, really valuable.
Great. Thanks, Andy. And thanks, everyone, for all the great questions. Eileen, thanks for bringing in Tom and the team. Thanks for bringing it to us today. I think we're going to continue to follow this closely, and it's nice to have these updates. I have one more question, and it's actually a question I think that goes to Chris. And Chris, it would be a perfectly adequate response to say you'll get back to us on this, but I'm wondering if we could take a step back for a minute to the broader Bay Area this district. And obviously Highway 37 is a very high threat, an area of immediate need, but I suspect there's a list of the top 10 or the top 20 or whatever it might be of critical infrastructure roadways in the district that are being impacted by sea level rise. Can you give us any insight there, or is it possibly something you could come speak to us about another day? What are your thoughts?
I would love the opportunity to bring a team and come speak with the board, you know, in a detailed fashion and kind of give you the information that you need to be informed. I will say here in the Bay Area, like all of you know, we're surrounded. You know, we have the infrastructure lining the bay, right? And then we have our coastal areas in Caltrans's District 4 area. And so each of those pose their own types of challenges. And so the landscape here in this district, District 4 for Caltrans, which is the 9 Bay Area counties, is incredibly complex and pressing and urgent and challenging. And so you're very, very adept to point out that 37 is really sort of a microcosm, if you will, of the challenges that that we're gonna face in terms of managing our transportation infrastructure in the future. But an opportunity to come and speak to that more directly in the details would be welcomed by Caltrans.
Great, thanks. We'll talk with our executive officer about getting that on our agenda, because while it can be difficult to get news out about the work that's going on, this is one vehicle we can use to share the work that is happening, that things are on the list, that they're in the planning horizon, that they're part of the $110 billion. So thanks. We'll be back to you on that. And again, thanks to Jeanette and Chris and Javier for this item. Great. I think we'll move on. Right. Wonderful. Okay. We're going to move on really to our final item on the agenda, which is our report outs. Sean McGuire, our state board liaison, is unable to join us today. So we're going to go right into the board member report outs first. So I'm going to start with board member Kissinger.
Nothing for me.
And then I'm going to go to board member Young.
Same no ABAC meeting last month.
Sorry, say that again. I missed it.
There was no ABAG meeting last month.
No ABAG meeting. All right, great. Board Member Balin?
Nothing to report.
All right. Board Member Gunther?
Just a couple of notes from the world of climate change. We're seeing some enormous, amazing events unfold before our eyes right now with the heat in the Southwest, where Phoenix is just about ready to break its number of 110 degree days in a row. and in the South through Texas. We're also seeing a remarkable fact that solar power is keeping the air conditioning on in Texas right now. Following up on that idea of building things fast, in Texas, you can build things pretty fast. And the amount of solar that has been brought online in Texas in the last few years is extraordinary, and it's very well timed with air conditioning load. We're also then seeing these intense rainstorms everywhere, like in Vermont. And I wanted to call people's attention to an article in the New York Times last week about the possibility of intense rainstorms causing overtopping or failure of dams. In Montpelier, just this morning, they kind of were able to take off the worry that the dam upstream from Montpelier was going to overtop. And most of you are familiar with ArcStorm, the simulation that the state of California did. And part of this article points out that ArcStorm actually didn't include that risk of overtopping or dam failure when coming up with that enormous estimate of flood damages. And I think that ArcStorm 2.0 is in process and it might include that. But it was just another way of really trying to make us all cognizant that as the climate changes, there are cascades of events that things that either we don't think about frequently or we don't want to think about, but we really need to try and make sure to expand our thinking to encompass all those things. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. I just want to highlight this again because Dr. Gunther puts out a really good climate news summary every month or two.
Every 2 weeks.
Okay, sorry. Every 2 weeks. And how do people find that?
You can go to andrewgunther.com and sign up or just email me and I will sign you up.
Wonderful. Thank you. Vice Chair Hacker.
Nothing to add.
All right, great. And then for myself, I just want to report out on the chair's meeting. So just a reminder that all the state water, all the regional water quality control board chairs and the state board executive team meet monthly, generally monthly. We were off last month. And we met just on Monday, and a few things just to highlight I found interesting. One is the budget update, which is still in the works, but we will see some reductions in some areas, some new staff in other areas being allocated. Quite a bit of focus on recycled water still, which is great to hear. Also on stormwater. So good news and bad news there. It's going to be maybe a couple of more austere years this year, next year, as we see what the budget looks like. Also SB 149, which was signed by the governor on Monday, I believe, which is expediting and simplifying some CEQA proceedings. That's going to be one for us to watch. There's a broad class of projects around transportation, energy, and specifically water-related projects that will have the option to choose a more expedited CEQA process. And it'll be something for our team to figure out how we are engaged in all of that. Could create some new pressures here on the staff, so we'll see what that looks like. And we're also starting to talk about the WQCC, which is scheduled for October. This is the Water Quality Coordinating Council, which is open to the public, I believe. It is a public meeting. And we've had really good board member attendance in the past. I hope we do this year as well. And we're starting to look at agenda items for that. The state board team has initial plans, but they have asked for any input. So if board members have input on what they'd like to see on the agenda, maybe let myself or Eileen know, and we can filter that up to Sacramento. We'll be giving more input to the state on that.
Is there a date?
Yes, there is a date. I'm going to make sure Eileen gives us the right date. We'll send that out. October 23, 24, something like that. Yeah, we'll get that to you.
Exactly.
Exactly. 23, 24, October.
Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah. Different than past years. It's on Monday, Tuesday. I think that's it from me for now. I'm going to turn it over to our executive officer for her report.
Great. Thank you, Chair Batty. I just want to provide you all with a summary of topics that we'll be discussing at upcoming board meetings this year. With the fiscal year ending on June 30th, we plan to provide updates on strategic work plan, fiscal year 23 organizational priorities and actions, and program targets and milestones of the September 13th board meeting. And we're looking forward to sharing our fiscal year 23 accomplishments. And then some other items that you'll see in the remaining months of this year, we'll be briefing the board on the municipal regional stormwater permit proposed amendments. We'll be doing that this fall. We also will be providing an update to the board on the Caltrans cease and desist order as we continue to work collaboratively with Caltrans and Save the Bay to make progress. And then we're also gonna provide an update to the board on how we've been using the statewide restoration general order. So those are just some of the topics ahead. And just wanna thank you for all your support as we're halfway through the fiscal year and excited to share with you what we accomplished this past fiscal year in September.
Touchy microphone. Okay. I want to do a couple things. First, I want to say thank you to Eileen, who has been here one full year on the board. So we're so happy to have you. Thank you for all you've done. I was saying to my husband last night that it's Eileen's 1 year anniversary, and he said, it's got to be longer than that. She walked into the door and we were immediately dealing with all the fish kills and the algae bloom. So Eileen, thanks for being here, and we're excited to see what comes up next.
or not.
Maybe not that.
I'm ready.
I do want to ask, Eileen had quite a substantive report in your package. Did anybody have questions about anything in Eileen's report? Dr. Gunther?
Just one thing, which is having been involved in developing the mercury and the PCB TMDLs, it's now we have a decade of mass loading information. And looks like they're working.
Yes.
I'm looking at you, Tom. I mean, just like this sense of you know, that was a tremendous amount of effort, and it was all about projected loading. And we are, you know, it's maybe there's been some pain worn to get to this point, but it seems like there has been, you know, we're below the allocations significantly. And that there's at least some indication of declining trends over time.
Well, I'll just don't want to take the wind out of your sail, but recall though that wastewater loading of mercury to the bay is essentially de minimis compared to historical loadings from both gold mining and mercury mining. So those allocations, we were obligated legally to impose allocation, but we essentially made them such that there never be any increase in loading from both the municipal and industrial wastewater players. But we've actually realized reductions due to like pollution prevention efforts implemented by the Bay Area wastewater community, for example, targeting amalgam at dental facilities. So it's a good story in that we're able to manage and cost effectively, say, control loading of mercury from wastewater. But the big picture still is challenged by the fact that we have more to do in terms of curbing legacy mercury pollution challenges. But we're making progress there as well because of cleanup and remediation work, say, in the upper Guadalupe River area where the New Albany mine was. And there are slowly but surely cleanups happening in various parts of the Central Valley where there was historical mining. But and the bay is showing it's not getting worse. It's going to take a while to get better just because there's such a large legacy mass of mercury and PCB in the system.
I appreciate that tissue concentrations of PCBs and mercury are very recalcitrant. But there are other ways these graphs could have looked and I like how they look.
Yeah.
So let's say thank you a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. All right. Great. We're going to adjourn the meeting now. The board will not be meeting in closed session today. This concludes our July 12th meeting. We are taking a break in August. There's not an August meeting. Our next meeting is scheduled for September 13th, 9 a.m. here at the Elilu Harris building. I do want to mention to board members is to maybe make sure your calendar is fully committed for September 13th. Could be a longer program, so we'll see, or maybe not. October may be a longer meeting. So just keep that time open. We appreciate it. And that concludes today's meeting. Thanks, everybody.